And hello, everyone, and thank you for joining the HITECH Annual Report Workgroup. I'm pleased to welcome our co-chairs, Madel Briggs-Melanson and Aaron Meary, along with workgroup members Hans Botendijk, Jim Jurgis, Anna McAllister, and Elia Oliveira. And we're hoping that Hannah Galvin will be also joining us soon. Public comments are welcome, which could be typed in the Zoom chat or could be made verbally during the public comment period later in our meeting. And I'd like to turn it over to Madel and Aaron for their opening remarks.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. And it is such a pleasure to actually be in our second annual report group meeting for this year. And so we have a lot of great items that we're going to go over today, and especially the discussion of our draft crosswork of topics. And so we look forward to a really engaging session as we continue to walk through those items. Aaron?
No, welcome. That's what you said. Let's jump into it. We get an agenda going today, and I want to give all the time in the world for us to talk through things. Let's start. Okay, so I'll start off, I guess I'll go through the first few slides here. So obviously here's our work group, here's all the membership of everybody. We're trucking along this year. I can't believe we're halfway through August, but here are the members. Next slide. All right, and here's where we are with scheduling perspective. And so right now we are obviously the 16th meeting. We got another one on the 30th and then 25th. This is the fast and furious time where we're starting to get things done and bring it back to the HITECH for consideration. Next slide. This is the dates we're going to the HITECH. So obviously we'll be updating them, Adele and I, on the 17th and then so forth and so on throughout the fall as we get to next springtime for transmittal. Next slide. All right, so some next steps here. Obviously we're gonna go through the crosswalk and talk more about some gaps and opportunities along with recommended activities. We have gotten some feedback recently from various HITECH members, some great feedback actually around items we should consider. I know Michelle's been incorporating that. So we'll be walking through the draft crosswalk and presenting on the 14th of September. And then of course, over the fall. Next slide. Okay, Madel, you wanna take it from here?
Sure, I'll take it from here. And you know, Aaron, there's so many items. How about we split this up as well? We'll do a couple of sections each. Wonderful. So let's go ahead and dive right on into the draft crosswalk of topics for this year's annual report. Next slide. So as we did very similarly to last year, but also the years prior to, we have the crosswalk divided by specific target areas. And so just to orient everyone to this again, and especially because we have new members of our annual report group, if we go across in the columns, we have our landscape analysis topic, which will actually go over each one of the topics that we're going to discuss, followed by the gap column. So why are we even thinking about this topic to begin with? Looking at the challenges and meaning the true implications of this topic and these gaps on how we deliver care, how our systems work. And then that's where all of us come in terms of the various different opportunities that we have in order to address those gaps and challenges, as well as propose recommended HITECH activities in order to support ONC as well as other entities. And so starting off with the very first target area, this is the design and use of technologies that advance health equity. So the very first topic is artificial intelligence. And so the gap that has already been identified by several members of HITECH is that AI holds significant promise in solving healthcare challenges, yet research and regulations are necessary to ensure that bias and harm are not implemented in the design and use of the new technologies. The challenge that has been identified is that AI that furthers inequities and bias is a significant concern that must be balanced with the potential benefits as policymakers develop efforts to regulate AI. So now we're going to open it up to all of the various different annual report group members to really talk about where are some of our opportunities. And this is also really in relationship to even the proposed rule for HTI-1 and some of our HITECH recommendations there. So we'll open it up to the group for this very first topic and say, what are some of your thoughts and what are some of the proposed HITECH activities that we can provide?
Adele, it's Jim Jurgis, just so I understand. So in the annual report, there's things that we did, like that we recommended for HITECH or responded around, you know, demonstrating in the EMR, for example, limitations to any particular algorithm. Are we describing here kind of what we have done or are we also talking about what we should do next year? Or both?
It's a little bit of both. So I think that there's some opportunities to, one, we will absolutely highlight some of the other work groups that have been working in various different areas. So for instance, the HTI One group was a very large work group from this past year. And so we will highlight some of those that work and recommendations, but also from the annual report group. We want to see if there's any additional recommendations that may not have been developed directly by the previous work groups that we want to propose to ONC as well.
Yeah, I'll give you an example, Jim. So Aaron Ninestein had a great point around patient-generated health data interoperability, right? So platforms not expressly covered as a certified health IT systems, but they sort of tangentially get into the health IT ecosphere that maybe don't have the same rigor and requirements as others, but we obviously in the provider side leverage those in some cases. So how do we deal with that? That's a net new per se topic that does touch upon previous topics of prior years, but it's a good, now it's a good time to talk through that, right? So that's a consideration point. So just as an example, Jim, that's kind of where Medell's going towards.
Yeah, well, on this one, I was going to say that, the FDA has been doing a lot of work, at least with publishing, their guidelines or whatever, their approach to this. And it sounded like HTI One, we were actually embracing that by operationalizing what the FDA was suggesting. So that's something that we did. One thing that we might think about is, okay, let's say that all happens. Is there an opportunity? I mean, what happens if someone suspects an algorithm is not performing or is being used in a way that is not, that is biased or creates harm? Is there an opportunity for us to recommend any kind of reporting? Do we want to just, or is that the FDA's responsibility?
Yeah, see, this is where we get in the lines of demarcation, right? What does ONC have jurisdiction over or not? And where we usually as a group defaulted historically was if it did cross into another swim lane, we invite that agency from that swim lane to come talk to us and brief us on what they're doing, right? And we try to incorporate that as sort of a process, or if there are things on the ONC side that we can assist them with and recommend to the ONC to do better communication, better documentation, better standards development, co-standards development, those kinds of things, then we develop them.
Well, then one suggestion would be if there are third parties that don't fall under the umbrella that are providing algorithms as a service, if they don't provide that baseball card that gives the different attributes that we're talking about, should part of the EMR reporting program, how are we going to track whether people are actually providing it or not? That might be a recommendation.
I agree with that, Jim, as well, because even with some of our prior conversations, we had clearly discussed it's really more focused on the interface between some of these other FDA-approved technologies and the interfacing with certified health technology, which is maybe more on the ONC side. So exactly as you're mentioning, making sure that we amplify what we've mentioned before about appropriately monitoring and documenting when certain standards that are or requirements that are defined by FDA and others, so that we can actually propose to ONC of saying, if this does not happen, then maybe there's some additional lack of certification for those various different technologies.
Yeah, you're right. Like with FHIR, I know that Ken Mandel and I and a couple others worked on EMR reporting requirements for FHIR, just for the EMRs to report to ONC, what people were exchanging, et cetera, through FHIR without any consequences. Just so step one might be simply us recommending that ONC develop a reporting program so they understand who is and is not adhering to, particularly these third-party vendors, so that at least they get information. Because if they find that all of the third-party vendors are adhering, that's a very different problem than if they find that only 5% are doing it. So maybe we start with just a reporting so they can get data to determine what next steps may or may not need to happen.
That's a suggestion.
Absolutely. So we have a lot of hands up as well that I know that.
Oh, sorry. I'll
about this. That's okay. That's all right. Great conversation. Hannah, I think your hand is up next.
Thank you. So, you know, there was, as we've mentioned, there was a lot about AI and bias, as well as being transparent about the AI technologies in HTI 1. And I know that ONC staff can't comment on rulemaking in process, but I wonder if we have a sense of when that final rule is going to be coming out, because I think that, right, we have made a lot of comments around the NPRM, and that a lot of what may shape the annual report may be based on what is actually ends up in the final rule. Do we have a sense of whether that's going to happen in the next few months or after the first of the year? Because I think that may shape a lot of this category. And if it's going to happen sometime soon, we may want to come back to this category after the final rule is dropped.
Really important piece. Michelle or Mike, is this something that we should, of course, cannot comment on that now, but is there a way that we can get a ballpark from ONC regarding when that may finalize?
Yes, we are working hard to finalize HTI 1 by the end of this year. So assuming it makes it through all the clearance processes involved, that is the goal.
Great. Thank you so much, Mike.
Which is a really good point. So in prior years for the new members of this committee, when there was a rule going through rulemaking, we did try to table things and put it into a parking lot so that we allow the final rule to come out, allowing for any adjustments or incorporation of feedback or whatever else. Obviously, suggestions matter, right? And so if there was something very timely, we always encourage the individual to write in those comments and comment in officially. But to the degree of it, it's a great point that during interim rulemaking, we probably will parking lot an item just to see where things land. Example being what we did with TEFCA many years ago with related to the final rule. We just wanted to wait until that was out.
But does that, does that risk it not being considered when it should be considered if there are elements that we recommended as part of HTI 1?
No, that's what we were saying, is that if there's urgent items identified, we would try to then say, hey, why don't you write in officially and comment directly to the ONC and say, hey, this thing is reading wrong, or I have a suggestion or whatever it may be, because the ONC is accepting every bit of feedback, right? And they incorporate, they listen, they read everything, so.
All right, Hans. So really great points though. Hannah, thank you for bringing that up. Mike, thank you for the clarification. And Aaron, also some of the context of how we can continue to proceed that way. Hans, your hand is up.
Yep, I was wondering is that there will be something between what was proposed and not likely nothing in the rule. Something will likely be there. And then looking at the timelines that were being proposed, if adopted as proposed and discussed, 2-3 years out is before we start to see that roll into where it applies to certified HIT. And I think as part of the conversation, and why I emphasized HIT, I think we want to be very crisp in this conversation around, are we talking EMRs and EHRs, or are we talking HIT? And is part of the scope for ONC those systems that actually provide and create the AI, and where that learning occurs, the algorithms are defined, and the outcome of that is being used by EHRs and provider-focused systems to then apply that in their workflows. That it's not directly in a patient-specific workflow, that it's part of their decision-making on protocols, processes, enhancements, changes in practice, whatever it might be, because it's population-based knowledge that's being garnered from that. So I think that we want to, in whatever we talk about, that we recognize is that there are different parties. And EHR may have AI capabilities directly in it, but also, it might not, and it comes from somewhere else. And we need to distinguish that and not put everything in the EMR and EHR bucket. But looking at that and not knowing what is going to come out, the extent of what could come out is transparency in what the capabilities do. And that in front end to the provider that we can provide that information, but a big dependency where that is coming has to come from that scorecard, report card, label, whatever we want to call it, on the actual developer and the actual performer of the AI. And I'm wondering whether that means is that in that period of time of 2-3 years, when things are starting to ramp up, is the recommendation, besides what Jim is making of maybe report card otherwise, but is it proper to suggest that there is a task force, a work group opportunity to now, based on what is in the rule, identify opportunities, what kind of guidance, education, awareness, otherwise needs to be built? Where do people need to look? Might already be out there. Maybe not that ONC has that available, but FDA or otherwise, but that we look at that space. What can we do as recommendations to prepare for and already inform whomever is going to develop such AI and otherwise to be used? And again, not just focused on the EHRs. Yes, that's where ONC mostly focuses with its certification, but other HIT that can be certified, or HIT or IT that contributes to it that may not be certified ever.
Awesome point there, Hans. And so what I'm really hearing you say is, what can we do in the gap? And so, and what can we do to actually be proactive, very similar to what Jim was mentioning? And I think that's a really great idea. And, you know, Aaron, I don't know if we've done this before in the past, and Mike and Michelle might also have some insight, but when we're in the process of an interim rule in which it has not been finalized, have we as HITACH ever taken what we've proposed for that proposed final rule? And just almost done a gap assessment of saying, like, if we don't know where it's going to land, but A, are there any other areas for opportunity that we can recommend? So similar to Jim, as well as Hans' comments. And B, if some of these items don't go through, what are some additional recommendations so that we're not just waiting, for instance, for a long period of time for some of these different rules to go into play? Have we ever done that as an approach?
I'm racking my brain, Madel. My recollection, no. We've always done the HITACH recommendations to go into the interim ruling, but never sort of that post-interim, pre-final reassessment that I'm aware of. Michelle and team, keep me honest here.
And maybe as a follow-on there is that by the time a task force would be pulled together, or a group of sorts would pull together, the final should be out, because we're talking next year. So I'm not sure whether it would be focused on what would we do until the final rule comes out, but a reasonable assumption, the final rule will come out. We just don't know what's in it. There will be areas of work to be done. If everything is filled in, or if something, there will be work to be done to get ready for it as part of the next 2 years to ramp up. Is there something we can do in recommendations to ease that path? And make sure the path lands where we want it to be.
Yeah. Mike, Michelle, do you guys know for certain? Because I can't recall any time we've done that.
Michelle, did you have a comment first? And then I'll take mine.
Sure. I was around then, although I didn't work directly on that stream of work. But what I observed was that there wasn't a formal, like, written effort to create a plan to capture everything that didn't make it into the comments or through into the rule, but that as ad hoc concerns came up, we addressed them through task forces and hearings. So it was more of an ad hoc approach, but what you're suggesting is maybe be a little more strategic. You know, if we have a good list of things that I think somebody else just mentioned that we might not know what's in the rule yet. I don't even know. So timing is a bit of an issue for this cycle, but it could be next year's report that needs to take up some of these more explicitly. There could be more of a general topic or, you know, action for this group to recommend, that when that is more clear, we tackle that. If that clarifies or not.
It does. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Of course, the comment period for the proposed rule is closed, so everybody at ONC is working on adjudicating those comments currently, and so the final rule is the final rule. And so the focus could be on you know, items that, you know, you did not already recommend, because of course the HITACH was a big contributor to that public comment period. So if you have items that, you know, weren't discussed in the task force that the HITACH didn't already recommend, then those are fair game to, you know, of course, list in your report and be helpful for the future.
As well as the proactive approaches as well, correct?
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you for that clarification. Elio, we see your hand, but Anna, you had your hand up, I think, before Elio, but then your hand went down. Did you have any additional comments?
I feel like that was like four thoughts ago, so I'm not sure what.
Okay.
Maybe well, we're take better notes on my thoughts, but
it'll come back to you. It'll come back to you.
Yeah. I mean, part of my struggle as I'm trying to figure out exactly what the role of this group is and how it works, and be, as you know, in light of that, how I can be most constructive in terms of my input and what I suggest. That's my Game of Thrones ringtone. Part of what I struggle with HR1, as well as like some of the comments that were made earlier with this group, is like, what is the difference between the jurisdiction of FDA over AI and AI uses versus ONC? And is it duplicative? Do we need to suggest that there's more of a like a line of demarcation, or would that be a lost opportunity to have some type of like regulatory interplay if there are like missing pieces in FDA policy that OEC could then?
Well, can I make a quick comment on that?
Sure.
Yeah, my understanding is that the Office of the National Coordinator, that there's a couple of functions. One is there's direct responsibility to draft regulation through its, you know, regulation process, that, you know, the HTI-1, et cetera. But the other responsibility is to coordinate across the organizations. And we've seen Mickey do a great job with, you know, coordinating with CMS. Sometimes rules come out at the same time that complement each other, right? The FDA, the CDC. So there is an ONC. HITACH advises the ONC. There is a role to make comments about, you know, if the FDA is up to something, well, what can the ONC do to complement that? And I think we saw that in HTI-1. Around public health reporting. So in my opinion, and I'd love, you know, others' thoughts on this, but Aaron and Adele, it seems to me that it is fair game to actually recommend collaboration, but that ONC, that because that's part of their responsibility. Is that accurate?
I look at ONC, and I voice this directly multiple times, as a very sophisticated air traffic control. And they help coordinate all the agencies and work efforts. So I think to the point of it, if we take that analogy, Anna, to your point, so let's assume that there's something squarely in the FDA's ballpark, right? It's one of their innovation items or AI items, something specifically they're doing, but it does have intersection point with something around certified health IT that we're working on. Clearly, most things they do, then we could recommend, say, hey, we need to work together and collaborate on X, or hold a joint hearing on XYZ, or whatever that topic is, as air traffic control would do when dealing with airplanes. So just, I think it's a great point. It is fair game to recommend that. We just can't mandate that, right? ONC has no way to tell the FDA, thou shall do this. That's not how that works. They really help as a coordinating entity and do a great job of it. So hopefully that gives a little bit clearer situation for you.
It is. It's very helpful. So thank you to everybody. I mean, like for instance, with algorithmic bias, I mean, one of the recommendations that, you know, I and others wanted to put into what we ultimately recommended to ONC was transparency about inputs and, you know, aims as well as outputs. And I think that's going to be absolutely essential, both when you're looking at, you know, racial and ethnic equity or other types of health equity issues, as well as, you know, differences in different populations. I mean, I use a continuous glucose monitor, you know, that calculation is driven by AI. Because I was on an advisory committee overseeing, you know, one of the label changes for that, I have an idea of what the data is. I don't think it's particularly reflective of data that, you know, CMS would need, et cetera. So like, if they could be more transparent and open about like what exactly the inputs and specific algorithms, for various things, then which should be doable, then like that would be beneficial across all the agencies and for individuals. So is that the kind of thing that you're interested in?
Yeah. And so, Anna, just to even to directly address what you mentioned, and then also to add on to what Aaron said, and I love his analogy of traffic controllers. The other piece is really making sure that those recommendations that we provide are within the authority and jurisdiction of HITACH as well. So we cannot provide, technically, we cannot say that these other agencies should do A, B, or C. We are here as an advisory committee to ONC in particular. So we just want to stay within our scope. But yet, of course, you know, ONC has done fantastic job, as everyone has said, in terms of coordination. So we do want to look, we are set here to really focus on how we can be very forward thinking and make sure to bring our areas of expertise to the table to help to support ONC and everything that's within ONC's scope and jurisdiction. While that can also, of course, mean, hey, love the collaboration. That collaboration is very important because then there's that bi-directional partnership and we can ensure that all of the various different areas are cared for in order to provide the best services to our patient populations, as well as to have the most, the structures that are based in integrity and justice. So all of those different pieces that you mentioned, but just kind of within our own playing field as well. All right, Eliel, hopefully you didn't forget. It's been a little while.
Thanks, Mabel. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with this. I'll put the link here on the chat about the trusted AI playbook that HHS put together. I got familiar with it because I was asked by, you know, the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation to take a look at it and provide some suggestions and met with folks about that. And so I had to actually understand it really well. And there's so much content here related to algorithmic bias that we're talking about that I think we can really benefit. And well, Steve Coney and others at the ONC were part of that, putting together that playbook. So it's a great resource, I think, for us, maybe as a proposal recommended activity here, a listening section of deep dive on that playbook that could influence what we talk about here. But as I was participating on that session with them, with ASP and others, one thing that became apparent of reading all that is that we don't have an identified agency that actually regulates anything on AIs, as you all know. And of course, we've at times talked that the FDA could end up being on that. But I think that maybe the opportunity here is to maybe advance a little bit, because I think the federal government is trying to figure out exactly what to do on that front. And in our charge is like, how do we then define what are the standards for any AI to interact with EHRs and other electronic systems? What are the certification criteria and other things that we need to have in place? I hope that's helping, but it seems like that could be an activity for us to learn more about the playbook and then see how that intersects with what we do in terms of the standards. But also keeping an eye on the fact that, and maybe that's where ONC can also provide guidance, and that we need a definition of who validate these methods and algorithms and approve them, and then how we then allow those to interact with the electronic systems.
Yeah, that's a good point. Historically, when we had new technology emerging on the market, we always held listening sessions to seek first to understand what's happening across the agencies, and then to your point, to be able to responsibly have oversight for patient safety purposes or whatever may be the point, Eliel. So I think it's a great point. I honestly don't know if there is an AR, this is AI, this is Aaron's words here, a czar of some sort to oversee all of those efforts. I don't know that. I know there's a lot of work going on, but it would not hurt for us to learn more as this work group or as a HITACH, what is going on with AI policy and regulation development, and how do we best help coordinate that, right, with our response? If that's what you're going after, it's a great point.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I was actually in a discussion literally yesterday about that exact piece of what you said, Aaron, and also what you're mentioning, Eliel, is that there's so many different agencies, so many different other entities that are working on this, but who is actually coordinating it and what are the true policies and standards that are rising to the top? And so just to sort of summarize what everyone's saying, because this is a wonderful conversation and discussion, but we're only on the first topic. And so from what it sounds like, and we can come back to this, it sounds as if we as the annual report work group are recommending two items for this landscape topic. And please let me know if I have this correct or not. Number one, to do a listening session to understand more about the AI policies and work that is being developed by the various different federal agencies, but also all of the other entities that are out there. And then number two, to develop a task force that will look into appropriate support and implementation of the final rule for HTI-1. And then therefore that task force can go a little bit deeper into exploring the various different opportunities that we as HITECH can recommend in order to ensure that the rollout of the rule in 2-3 years will be as successful as possible. Did I sort of capture that? Was that, or any other modifications?
No, that sounded great.
Sounds great.
Okay. Wonderful.
Eliel, for sharing that report. I had not seen that, nor did I know that we had a chief AI officer at HHS. So that's helpful to know. And I love the idea of like getting some sort of an overview.
Absolutely. Okay, great, everyone. Thank you for that. Now on to topic number two, missing health IT infrastructure for health equity and social drivers of health data. And one thing just for the annual report group to notice is that we have now officially adopted the term drivers versus determinants of health in order to really incorporate how dynamic these drivers are versus determinants being very static and almost seeming deterministic, but really that we can impact people's health by addressing these drivers because of their ability to either improve or worsen one's health and overall healthcare outcomes. And so the gap that we actually have and noted is the collection of health equity and SDOH data remains inconsistent due to a lack of standardization and frequency of the recording of this data and the lack of adoption of IT tools by community-based organizations. The challenges that we know exist are that additional standards are needed to support the collection and electronic exchange of health equity and SDOH data, and many CBOs lack the IT infrastructure to support collecting, sending, and receiving SDOH data. So want to definitely open it on up to the group and get some of your thoughts and feedback on this very important topic that we've discussed as well. Hans.
Yeah, question that I have, and that's around the first bullet, that perhaps, do we need to be more specific in our recommendations, or is there an opportunity for otherwise identifying what they are? And part of it is that there are a number of standards that are currently being updated to enable exchange of such data. Some of that is starting to be published. Some of it will not happen based on where they are over the next 6-8 months, et cetera. So there's work in progress that will address a body of work there. But is there something missing there? And is that, how can we identify what that might be? Or is the work in progress covering it? And once it's published, then we have the standards. It's now a matter of implementing it. I'm not sure where we are on that on that space, and whether we have a clear understanding what's the full data set. I think we have the core, I think, is understood, but is that indeed the complete set that's relevant of interest? And the second is that then what kind of work is actually needed to add that to the standards? But mostly, probably, how do we go about implementing adoption, utilization, et cetera, of the standards that have been published?
All of the above, Hans, I would say.
Madel, I'll apologize. Go ahead.
Yep, really quickly, because we know that there's a large amount of work that's being done in order to try to define them. But this is very similar, I feel, to AI. There's a lot of work being done on SDOH and health equity data, but is there a primary core in which we know that it's fully comprehensive? And that's even one of the areas that I've struggled with. And so that is something that we likely, that can be part of our recommendations of making sure that there's full clarity in terms of what is being worked on. And even we as HITECH, do we feel like that is very comprehensive? But then also what you mentioned, Hans, about the true integration of that within all of our health IT systems, as well as the adoptions and the appropriate use of that data is also very key.
You're exactly right, Madel. I apologize for stepping on you there a second ago. I thought you had finished your thought. But what I was curious about, Hans, just double clicking on what you said, do you mean data elements outside of the US CDI sort of process, other items that have not, because we're starting to touch on SDOH elements, as you know, with the certification process. I'm taking it, you're looking at all other dimensions, all other aspects of those determinants that are outside of already on the US CDI list. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, because I don't think it's just about bullet one, but additional standards. But if we talk about this topic, it is what's there when it's coming out, we have them, but now it's also the promotion, the inclusion of those appropriate. There are aspects that are not standards or technology. Data is hard to collect. What's the right place to collect it? What is the best source that people feel comfortable to share the data where they might not? And how is then the privacy and security, or privacy particularly, how is that managed to make sure that it's used correctly, appropriately, et cetera? So I think we have to be careful that in order for it to work, ONC clearly focuses on the technology and standards aspects for that, but we need to recognize that those other elements are in play as well to actually make it useful and indicative of what we're looking for.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you for the clarity, Frank.
And unfortunately, I need to jump. So
thank you for your comments.
Thanks, Hans. Have a great presentation.
Thank you.
Eliel.
Yeah, so this is a good discussion, and I think from my perspective, given the leap work that you guys saw and I presented a little bit, you may recall like how I was talking about even within one provider, their needs assessment was 53% of the data elements they were capturing did not have a standard on a gravity. So there's a need here to probably continue that gravity work to expand the definition of standards, because there's still a lot of empty spaces, if you will. And I think that's one of the discussions that we had on our sides, that they face-to-face HITECH meeting. But then the other piece that becomes quite important, which I think is related to the CBOs, like IT infrastructure and all that, is some work around pilots beyond the one that we just demonstrated a bit, and how, you know, a landscape analysis of systems the CBO use or not, that can allow us to maybe advance on how the CBO's integration would be advanced. Like, you know, there are so many types of CBOs out there. What electronic systems they use? Do they even have computers? You know, a landscape analysis would help us quite a bit in terms of defining a pathway to developing a way to integrate these organizations in an electronic system. So I hope that makes sense of the two things that comes to mind when I read this.
It definitely does. Extending the work that the Gravity Project has done in order to ensure that we do have that full comprehensiveness of some of the various different elements, but then also how do we support the CBOs? And if I can add one thing, Hannah, see your hand. That infrastructure, and especially for those of us that work with these CBOs and really trying to address social drivers of health, the infrastructure is not there because the money is not there. And so that is something that we also really need to consider. If this is the financial aspects of actually helping to support the IT infrastructure and as well as the training of the staff in order for them to fully understand the full interoperability capabilities, as well as how to use the data appropriately. That's all part of this. And so really the funding for both the creation of the structures, as well as for personnel support, as well as sometimes even for patient support, that really has to be considered. So Hannah, we see your hand.
Thanks, Miguel. Yeah, I want to echo that, right? I mean, ONC has developed programs in the past where there has been a need, right? We have a public health IT workforce program where there's a need, right? And highlighting the need for IT infrastructure for community-based organizations, in this case, specifically around social drivers of health, but not just around social drivers of health, right? But the ability to share PAMI data, right? Problems, allergies, meds, right? You know, information with community-based organizations, with schools and school nurses, right? That type of information in a structured way. And so I wonder if that might be one ask, is a program that would develop, the framework to fund CBOs in some type of grant-based way, to house grants for CBOs to have that infrastructure. The second thing I was going to say was working with their HHS and other sort of executive branch partners around how social drivers data will be used and creating policy and legislation around that, right? If people are going to disclose social drivers and they are incorporated then not just into the health record, but we have more and more payers that are asking for this data purportedly for the benefit of patients to be able to get them transportation services and sort of other services that they need, food services if they need them. But right, this data is out there then and can be used ostensibly in algorithms. We already know that patients who have social drivers of health have more healthcare needs. And it's not long, if it's not happening already, that payers or others who create sort of actuarial algorithms are going to start using this data in those algorithms. And I think that sort of working with partners to, you know, the other sort of legislative partners to understand how this data would be protected and not used in a way that might be compromising to the individuals who disclose it will be important the more it's shared across the ecosystem.
Good points, Hannah. Great points.
Absolutely. Definitely that area of privacy as well for our patients. Absolutely. All right. So any other thoughts or comments about our missing health IT infrastructure?
No, I like the comment, Miguel, on that Hans made and tying in what Eliel and others have been saying around determinants, those data elements. If I take patient report outcomes, PROs is an example, right? Which have been around for a hot minute, but we're still struggling to incorporate PROs as standard nomenclature into our data sets. And how do you distribute that and share it? And is it a part of your data set that you share with others? All these things, that's just one element of social determinants, right? How do we double click that and expand upon it so that, because there's so many different types of PROs beyond a PHQ2 or PHQ9, beyond a GAD or beyond a Who's Coos or beyond all these things, how do we begin to get those data elements that go into those, just as that one, just one example, right? And how do we begin to distribute that so that it's interoperable? It's a great question mark. And I do think it's, as we get further into USCDI rulemaking, we're seeing those gaps more and more apparent. So it's a great conversation.
Absolutely. Anna, you just gave a great comment in our chat. And so thank you for raising your hand as well.
Sure. And I mean, sort of building on my comment, I mean, my understanding of social determinants of health, like, is like the data that would be relevant maybe some of it's capturable and structured, but it would not be traditional health data. So like the number of grocery stores within a particular neighborhood, the number of physicians or specialists within a particular neighborhood or driving distance, et cetera. Like some of that kind of thing is accessible via an API and structured format, but it's not what I would traditionally think of as being within the domain of health data. And I'm just wondering if ONC has jurisdiction over acquiring, creating standards for whatever word we want to use, that sort of data input. Because I think that's, you know, if you tell somebody they need more vegetables and there's no grocery store, then, you know, their ability to get it, then, you know, it's pointless, et cetera.
Agreed. And so, and that's what we know we've been missing so often in healthcare for so long, of really being, of truly putting the experience of all of our patients right at the very middle, instead of just assuming that people and their families, it's all equal. They have access to equal opportunities when we know that's that does not exist. And this data is really key. And so kind of summarizing what everyone has been mentioning, we've gone all the way from thinking about our technical aspects of social driver data, and we know that it continues to evolve. And so what can we do to continue to support that evolution, as well as and to ensure that there is full adoption and appropriate implementation and use of that data? And so whether that's through USCDI, or whether that's through, again, charging the Gravity Project to continue all of their amazing work to expand that. But then also, how do we support our CBOs? Because we know this cannot work without our CBOs at all. And so we know that the CBOs historically have lacked a lot of the various different resources that they need, both physical resources, financial resources, personnel resources, in order to help us to close this loop, because this has to be done in a partnership. So what does that look like? And then, you know, even going, Hannah, what you were mentioning as well, some of those pieces are really important and kind of goes back to LAL about maybe additional pilots in order to continue to support and identify some of those best practices. But then also thinking about the use of that patient data and the privacy of that data. And then, Anna, we have to think about even the data that's going to be most relevant. So a lot of important concepts here. And so hopefully with this discussion, our ONC team will be able to help us sort of bring out more themes for us to really kind of drill down on it even more, so we can have some very clear proposed recommendations in this space, because there's a lot of areas within this space in order to really support this infrastructure. Hannah, I see your hand too.
Thanks, Manel. I just wanted to follow up briefly. We have the benefit of having Sarah DeSolvi from the Gravity Project on the high tech, and we may want to just ask her her thoughts here, but I know that the Gravity Project has done an incredible amount of work. I also know that they continue to struggle for funding. So one recommendation maybe, and we would want to, I think, consult her specifically, or the rest of others in the Gravity Project about this, is you know, an opportunity for a LEAP grant or something like that to help fund this work going forward.
Same.
Wonderful. That's a really great recommendation.
Yeah, great suggestion, Hannah.
All right. Any other thoughts or comments on this topic? Okay. Not seeing any. Let's go on to the next one, increasing access to and accessibility of telehealth services. Telehealth has been a hot topic for many years. But this is also within the target area of design and use of technologies that advance health equity. So the gap that was identified, telehealth continues to bridge access gaps, but still poses risk of exacerbating disparities. And so the challenge is patients, including those with limited English proficiency, visually impaired, as well as face accessibility challenges in using telehealth. So this is an area for us to also speak a little bit more of in terms of how do we really address this need to be inclusive as much as possible in terms of not only our designs as well as accessibility of telehealth services. Any thoughts? And I'm just going to point to Eliel, because Eliel, I think this was one of the primary topics you brought up too in the past.
Yeah, thanks, Mendo. And I think that aligns well with the point that I put on the chat about access to connectivity is a big challenge still for many individuals that are trying to get telehealth help. I know that's not a standard, but I think as part of our discussion here is that you have seen how much funding have become available federally for broadband, right? And we talk about that here in Texas quite a bit. But then if that's going to organizations in rural areas, not to individuals, and the underserved individuals that continue not to have access. So it's not necessarily a problem maybe for high tech, but I think important to highlight that that's a big gap still to allow telehealth to exist. And then, yeah, when it comes to standards, I don't know of any well-established ways that telehealth tools, I think we all jump on the bandwagon through COVID, right? Because we had to. But now that the dust has settled, I don't know of any specific requirements that we have put in place yet to say, okay, there is an integration pathway here for patient portals and EHR so that these calls guarantee that I'm having the discussions with the right individuals. Like, I think that's one key concern I've always had. Like, if you are in a phone-based call, especially now with AI voice, how do you know who you're really talking to? I have all kinds of concerns there in terms of making sure that it's a secure channel that's initiated by the right individuals and organizations, we are not opening door for social engineering, which is the biggest issue I've seen in terms of data breaches. So there are no standards that I know of on how these technologies are integrated to the systems today. So I think there's an opening door here for us to make some great advancements and start defining what that should look like.
Your point, Eliel, the standards I know of are really related around HIPAA, right? What the OCR has put up there, and pro tip, the 90-day grace period has expired. So we go back to what is a HIPAA compliant telehealth modality and what's not. So I think to your point, Eliel, there's also some sorting through post-COVID what telehealth looks like now that the waivers have been relaxed, the waivers that were relaxed are reinstituted, those sorts of things. So it's a great point on standards development now, interoperability. And what should it look like based on what we learned during COVID? It's a great point, in my opinion.
I agree. And not seeing any hands up on this topic, I'll jump into. And my observation was also about standards. In a lot of our other technology, and this is technology, sometimes most of the time, even without outside of healthcare, there are certain standards that technology has to be built with. And I feel that, and I'm not aware, maybe it does exist, but I do feel like we are missing standards in terms of the overall accessibility and inclusivity of our telehealth platforms, especially those that deal with more video telehealth. And so we have some listed here in terms of limited English proficiency, but what I was thinking of as well is, what standards do we have in terms of ensuring that all of our various different technologies truly are linguistically diverse in order to help to support our patients that speak non-English or other languages at home that are not English? But in addition to that, we also know that we have so many diverse abilities of our patient population, but are there standards to ensure that all of our telehealth platforms do support those who are visually impaired and do support those that actually do have are hard of hearing as well? And so it seems like we need to have just some baseline requirements, and maybe we have some, but I've been looking for some baseline requirements to ensure that there is full inclusivity of people and their various different identities and their experiences so that everyone's receiving equitable care. And it seems like that would fall directly within ONC's jurisdiction, primarily due to the fact it is part of certifying health information technologies. So Hannah, I, I'm sorry, Anna, I see your hand first and then Hannah.
I guess I'm a little confused about certain aspects of this one because from my perspective, I feel like telehealth has helped get over some of the barriers to access, particularly for people who live in geographic regions or areas or have difficulty with mobility and, you know, getting access to care. So I feel like it's actually gotten rid of some of the barriers to health equity as opposed to increasing them. I mean, I say that knowing that it does require bandwidth and all of that kind of thing, and there is a technology there, but, you know, smartphones are relatively ubiquitous at this point. Even people who don't have like cable or like a laptop have access to smartphones. And it's actually, I mean, just thinking about my family, my relatives who live in different places that aren't necessarily in big cities, it's actually made it easier for them to get care. And you know, I'm a remarkably white person from Ohio who speaks English. So I admit that from, you know, the get-go, but maybe I'm missing something, but I feel like we don't want to restrict the emergence of new telehealth by putting a lot of burdens on each of these sort of startup telehealth companies that might make it so cumbersome that it would be a barrier to entry.
So Anna, thank you so much for those comments. And I think that we can all agree that telehealth has actually increased access as well as just sort of streamlined the ability to receive high quality care through telehealth services. But one of the things that we have clearly noticed with the expansion of telehealth is that those that were marginalized have become even more marginalized from those services. So Eliel had previously mentioned in his chat how, while we know that the vast majority of people have mobile phones, what happens is that in order to really get on a lot of our telehealth platforms, you do have to have data plans. And those data plans at times are not inexpensive. So because of that, that does add some additional barriers. In addition to that, what some of the different factors that I was referring to about the inclusivity based off of one's ability, as well as off of one's language, we have noticed significant differences in the ability to take care, to take part in telehealth services because of that, because our technologies are not really focused on that. So what we're really trying to get to is not really cause more hoops for our health IT innovators to jump through, but we're trying to make sure no one's left out, no one's left behind, and especially those that are most marginalized, that they do absolutely can benefit from some of these new technologies. So it's kind of like, I always look at this as, we have phase one, great, a lot of people were helped, but how do we get those that have traditionally been pushed out to the margins, really more of this access to this incredible technology to help their overall health and outcomes. So that's what we're really referring to. And a lot of these different pieces, again, a lot of these standards exist in other domains, but it would be wonderful to also incorporate them into our health IT domains as well. But thank you for that comment for sure. Hannah.
Yeah, thanks, Madel. So I was going to comment on some similar to what you said. I have a few comments. The first is absolutely we need additional infrastructure around broadband access and funding for this. Here in Massachusetts, there is an organization called the Mass Broadband Institute that has a lot of funding from the state and is disseminating that funding to invest in infrastructure. And I think that is a good model. I think there are some other models in other states in doing this for those areas that really have not caught up technologically, especially in public housing and other areas where some of the most marginalized populations don't have access to broadband. Also investing in community-based organizations and public infrastructure, libraries, schools, where people can go to potentially have private telehealth services, and looking at sort of creative solutions there. So I think that's one sort of investing in those types of programs. Two would be thinking with, again, partners and other agencies partners with the WIC program and the sort of food stamps program that do currently provide smartphones, but how those could sort of beef up data plans specifically for telehealth, right? And I think the third is around parity between audio telehealth and video telehealth. Right now at the end of the PHE, we are seeing that a lot of the commercial payers and even Medicare and Medicaid are really restricting the use of audio telehealth. And even when they say they're not, if you actually really dig deep into the facility charges and how to bill for the facility charges, it's making it sort of untenable to continue to allow for audio visits for patients who really don't have the bandwidth to do video visits. And so really working with our partners at CMS to really understand those disparities, who is able to access a video televisit and who is not, and having sort of a payment structure that will support those who may not have access to high bandwidth internet.
Anna, those were all amazing points, and especially as it integrates with some of the various different policies that we're seeing coming down from some of the other agencies. So I think those are all really, really key. Thank you for those. Okay, so time check. We're going to start going through a little faster because Aaron and I are kind of getting the nudge to get through a few more topics. So one more is reducing the digital divide. And so this one is the last one, I believe, for the health equity target area. So reducing the digital divide, further requirements and initiatives are needed to reduce the digital divide, including encouraging health equity to be a core design feature and component in healthcare. Lack of or limited access to broadband and mobile internet is correlated with worse patient health and public health outcomes. So we were kind of already discussing this in the prior topic. I'm even wondering if these can be, although they're still separate, there is some overlap of them. But any thoughts, any additional thoughts outside of what has already been mentioned?
Almost one and the same, right? The topic we were just having, to your point, Madel, in my opinion.
Agreed.
I think there's a substantial overlap. I mean, my question I just put in the chat is like, how much is in with our domain to recommend? I mean, should we recommend things like, you know, providing broadband more ubiquitously throughout the country, or, you know, incentives for creation of services for specific languages? Is that within our domain, or do we need to think about stuff within the context of data standards?
My opinion, we can recommend, I think we can recommend, I don't know what authority ONC would have to do it, but they could coordinate with the various agencies that provide funding back to causes and health. You know, I mean, I think there's opportunity to link that together. It's a great point. There's a lot of money out there for different folks all about broadband. So I don't know what the linking play is. I mean, even the White House, right? Didn't the president recently make an announcement that broadband should be as ubiquitous as electricity and water or something to that effect? So, I mean, there's even interest in the White House. I don't know. It's a great point.
Yeah, so my recommendation here is that we probably could advance this, and has to do a little bit to do with standards, is the fact that individuals that are underserved, that don't have access to anything, don't have the resources to, they usually have to apply to some service, and they have to be, their eligibility has to be validated. And you know, sometimes they don't even know how to get that paperwork together. So what happens is they end up not getting the services. So is there a way to develop the necessary standards here and data access necessary to kind of like preemptively kind of define who needs to have that service and be provided to them, as opposed to make this complex process where folks just don't get to it, because everything else gets impacted by the fact that someone doesn't have digital access, you know? So that might be where ONC can play a role here. It's like how, and I have seen solutions like that out there where you tap into different data sets in a de-identified way, but are able to determine that someone doesn't own a car, doesn't own a house, they don't have an employment in place, and automatically, like, we could know, okay, this person should be having a device so that we can actually communicate with them and help with other things. So I think the opportunity here might be that is, how do we accelerate the process of getting folks access to technology, to the internet, as opposed to having this cumbersome process with where someone is already struggling to just survive. They don't have transportation, can't, you know, even get the food that they need. And now they're going to have to go through an application process to get a phone line. I think we can probably do better on that anyways. But those are my thoughts on the opportunity that I see ahead of us. And maybe is the recommendation here is to kind of like learn from where all this comes together. And if there is an opportunity here for ONC to set up standards for data exchange that allows this to be predetermined and the services be provided kind of automatically.
All great comments. And it's almost it looks like a combination of, Elia, what you and Anna were saying, like, is there a way that we can help to influence this and sort of back into it of saying, here's the standard, let's streamline this. But then Anna, what you're referring to is even for the innovators is, if we have various different standards, how can we also ensure that the innovators have some type of push, whether it's an incentive or something else, in order to comply and just kind of jump on board to enhance these technologies. So all really, really important. Hannah, your hand's up, and then we'll sort of wrap up and go to the next topic.
Thanks. Yeah, I have two comments about this. Number one, Elio, I love that idea. Back in 2017, AMIA, the American Medical Informatics Association, recommended that broadband access be included as a social driver of health. And, you know, I think that maybe ONC, or at least this group, could sort of echo or sort of socialize that recommendation. I think that that is a really good way to have it included as a standard and sort of proactively ask that question if it needs to be defined a little bit better in terms of what does that mean? You know, for when asking patients, you know, do you have access to, you know, to broadband? Because I think people don't necessarily know what that means from across just on asking. The second thing is that I might recommend working with the FTC. The FTC does have the ACP or Affordable Connectivity Program, where you can refer individuals who need affordable broadband. They get a discount for their households, depending on sort of their needs. But the application for that program is really difficult. And often people need to sit with like a digital health navigator or someone else to help figure out the application for the program. And so I think that one of the things we may think about recommending is that the FTC simplify their application. I don't know if we can make that recommendation to them and have it in multiple languages. They do have it in a few different languages, at least their website, but I'm not sure the application itself. Because I think just filling out that application itself, I've seen, has been a barrier to people getting those services. And so I think that, you know, in ONC's role as coordinator, perhaps that's something that that they could do.
Wonderful. And Hannah, those two points, technology, help technology, both access as well as digital literacy, are absolutely social drivers of health. And for instance, I can tell you within my work, I've always included it as the seventh domain of social drivers. And it would be fantastic. I agree with your recommendation. If ONC, as we're now embracing SDOH even more, that is part of what we set up as a standard, because it is a very impactful social driver. And thanks again for this. And Aaron, also thanks for filling out the sending out the link in terms of what we can do to really help those that need these services most. And it's unfortunate we sometimes put those that need the most help through the most barriers. And so making recommendations to say, let's think about who we're serving and what we can do to assist, I think that would be a really great piece there. All right, everyone. So we have a lot of different recommendations for this area that do overlap with the previous subtopic. And so we're going to move on to the next piece. Okay, Aaron, I'm going to turn it on over to you.
Sounds good to me. All right. So use of technology to support public health, right? Gaps in infrastructure and standards, right? The gap there is a need for infrastructure to support data sharing and promote standardization coordination across different systems and data sources. The challenge, obviously, with that infrastructure gaps in public health reporting capabilities, syndromic surveillance issues, prevented public health authorities and healthcare from receiving timely information. We saw this with COVID. We've talked about this in a lot of the prior reports. So I think the question we should be asking ourselves as a report work group is, are there other pieces, like we've spoken about today earlier with SDOH interoperability, are there other pieces and gaps that are inhibiting just data sharing in general? I'll be honest and also open it up here that, and it's a true statement, that we are not seeing a understanding with the health IT vendor community on what data can be promulgated and shared, especially with some of the main electronic health records vendors. And I would have said this with Hans in the room, it's nothing to do with any of these vendors, but it's the understanding of what is information blocking, what's not, which leads to interoperability questions and abilities there. So a lot of health IT vendors are still reluctant to share data for whatever reason, standards or not. So as we talk about gaps to me in infrastructure, the infrastructure also is policy adherence. Now, we used to be policy creation. Now it's policy adherence to sharing data. So to me, it's both, but that's my take. So what are some opportunities and recommended activities from the high tech? What are we from the group? What do we think?
So Aaron, as everyone's thinking about this more, you know, we had this as a subtopic or as a topic last year as well. And we specifically worked on a lot of our various different exchange of all of our, for instance, our ECRs and other items too. And it just makes me think, do we need to have a quick review of what we recommended last year in this area? And then that will help us to build upon still the existing gaps, as well as some of the new gaps that we've even experienced even after COVID, because I feel like we've maybe taken one step forward, but we still have a long way to go, as you mentioned.
Yep, I think it's a great idea. I don't think we have time this afternoon to do that, but I think we could definitely review that offline. Mm-hmm. And come to the next report or group with some clear thoughts in mind to double click on this. To your point, it's just not going fast enough. And as we've all articulated many times over, it's not a technology challenge, right? The tech exists to make this happen. It's an other challenge, which we have got to nip in the bud. Enough is enough. So, okay.
Yeah, if I may.
Eliel, you're next. Yes, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't see hands.
So what is coming to mind here is related to an opportunity in this area is that, you know, I was in the public health reporting group last year, and, you know, a lot of the discussion there about the submission of, you know, the forms and you know, all that and how EHRs are going to, you know, standardize on that. And was there still a lot of, like, discussions about the type of format and if you're using FHIR or not. And I think that's all great. I think that it's still a process by which there is a push of information taking place from EHRs, from an organization to the CDC or whatnot, or whoever needs to receive that information, right? And I think we have done tremendous advancement there since COVID. So great work there. And I think that's great because the level of precision of the data that's needed in those reports are necessary, right? And you have to be captured the right way. But I feel like there's an opportunity to maybe develop sensing technologies that can look at the data, you know, at the national level in a de-identified way, but it's kind of capturing how specific things are taking place so that we can kind of have an early warning of some, you know, public health event before we are capturing and analyzing these forms and data that's be submitted. I think the analogy I think when I think about this is what we had related to, I think we call that sewage epidemiology, right? Where instead of like trying to get lab results from anywhere, you're basically looking at a sewage and measuring levels of elements that basically can determine that there's something going on within a city or a region. And I think that it may be sounding a bit different than what we do currently in terms of data, but I believe it to be an opportunity to innovate, to define the standards by which EHRs maybe have to expose the levels of data elements that they are being captured. Then, and by easily doing so, you know, you can see the metrics of where a specific, you know, lab result, for instance, is measuring across the country at any second in time and how it's changing. And by that, then you can have a warning system that can say, okay, we are catching more flu incidents here in this specific region, what's going on there, and so on and so forth. So I think to me, that's an opportunity because yes, we have a great process going in place that leads to high quality data, but requires a lot of analysis and time and processing. And there may be an opportunity to do an early warning system in this front.
That's really insightful, Eliel. And just to make sure that I'm understanding this, you're referring to that one of the recommendations is to set up an infrastructure for, as you mentioned, early warning systems, where we're literally hotspotting where new incidents of whether it is an infectious disease or some other public health incident that's going on. And so that is a centralized system of some sort in order to alert others throughout the country what may be going on in a certain area based off of various lab tests, based off of various different analyses. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. And again, it needs to start somewhere with standards, right? Mm-hmm. And that could be a specific use case. Let's say we're just going to monitor influenza, right? And that everybody's exposing that as a fire API influenza, and the CDC is basically pinging that every second of the day. And they are able to capture by region what's going on. And then they create the baseline, right? But then when you start seeing spikes, someone is being alerted that there's something taking place here that we can react quickly. And that's one example. Influenza is one thing, but there could be hundreds of, you know, monitoring like that take place. And I'm dying to hear what Hannah has to say as a physician as well. but I think that's the idea, that there is probably a definition of standards, you know, how something like that can happen. And now that we have fire, it's feasible.
Right. Absolutely. Truly real-time data for us to all act upon in the clinicals and the public health settings. Hannah.
Yeah, thanks, Eliel. So I had a couple of thoughts and questions. One is, I think public health sharing of data is on the TEFCA roadmap. And so I'd want to sort of better understand where this lies with TEFCA. Mm. Right. I think it's not a use case they have, you know, one of the first use cases. I think they're looking on treatment and individual access, and then sort of where they are in getting to this as we make recommendations. Do we recommend that this gets moved up, right? In sort of as any of TEFCA builds out these frameworks. To Eliel's point as well, I think one of the big barriers that I've seen here is around patient matching. As well. And so, right, do we make some recommendations here back to Congress around a national patient health identifier? Because you know, this is one of the big holdups. And so is this the place to do it? So those would be sort of my two comments here.
I'm giving you a virtual high five, Hannah. Yeah. We've had the national patient identifier, unique patient identifier in, gosh, the past four annual reports. I know that probably longer than that, because we talked about it in the even the policy committee and standards committee days. And as you know, all the rigor and other items, you know, holding that back. So I think that's a great point. The other thing we could do, I think, related to your TEFCA comment, and I'm opening up to the group here for comments, is my feedback, though. I think it's a great point. We also talked about that in the past couple of reports related, especially around public health surveillance and how the TEFCA would play into that. So bringing that back up as now TEFCA is getting off the ground, the QHINs have been awarded, you know, what does that look like? So dusting that off. And then three, you know, it's a good point you brought up, and I haven't thought about this. So I'm asking this out loud for the group. Could we reference prior reports? And like, in my mind, it's like, since we brought this up now multiple years in a row as an issue, using unique patient identifier as an issue, like, is there some sort of like big gold star or something you put beside it to catch people's attention? Like, guys, this is a holding us back. Like, what else do we got to do? Like, shake the earth kind of thing. So people can see that this is a major, major issue if high tech feels that way. So it would be interesting now that we have some history with the report, right? With the reports, to say, we've brought this up numerous times and ain't nothing getting done. So what do we got to do to move the ball on this?
I don't know about the history of in previous or pre-pandemic annual reports, but right, if we said something like, we brought this up even before the pandemic,
yes,
now after the pandemic, right, and throughout the pandemic, we've brought it up, but even more so, right, going through this experience, right, we see, you know, even more the value of this in being able to do real-time public health reporting. I think that. But obviously we defer to what ONC staff think in terms of the sort of the structure of the report and how those are usually done.
Should we recommend that ONC or somebody do some sort of a cost analysis of not having patient identifiers in terms of?
I could have sworn, and this is recollection, that there was a CBO assessment that was done not too long ago on this exact same topic, or something to that effect, and it was asked for HHS to provide that, and I believe they worked with an agency to make that happen. So it's a great question, and we need to research that of what analysis have been done, and do we need to dust it off and redo it, given how things are going now. So I do think it's a good question we can go research and come up with. Not just the cost financially, but patient lives, right? We know that there are sentinel events or near misses that occur because of a lack of a unique identifier. We know that, right? It's been codified, it's been reported on widely in the industry. So how do we quantify and qualify that? Good questions. That's a good question. I'm gonna do a quick time check here. We've got to go to public comment. And then if there's time, we can come back to talk about the last area here. Medell, if you're in agreement, do you think we can go? All right, so Mike?
All right, thank you. We're going to open up our meeting for verbal public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. Let's pause this for one moment to see if any members of the public raise their hand. In the meantime, I just want to remind everybody our next annual report workgroup meeting is August 30th, I believe. So we hope to see you then. Not seeing any hands raised, so I'll turn it back to our co-chairs. Thank you.
Wonderful. So let's take the last 5 minutes here and see if we can knock out this last item, unless there's any further comment on the prior topic.
Are we going to get to the other items in the meeting in a couple of weeks?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah, that's why there's like several of these meetings stacked up to get through all this, because it takes some time to have these conversations in depth. Okay, Excel team, do you mind? Yeah, there we go, perfect. Put on the back on the previous, there we go. All right, so last area here, really quick, let's see if we can target through this thing. Interoperability, supporting interoperability standards priority use cases. Again, this is around similar to what we've been talking about with gaps, but what are the missing links, right? Again, I've used the comment or question and suggestion that we got from Aaron Neinstein, Dr. Neinstein, regarding PGHD, patient-generated health data, and lack of interoperability standards around those non-certified health IT systems that do our patient touching, right? So are there other gaps? So we'll start here that we are starting to see in the industry becoming a major issue and impediment to care? That would be the question we start with here. Open up to the floor. Give an example.
I would say there are absolutely gaps.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I should have raised my hand, but this is a big area of concern and frustration for me as somebody who uses a lot of data generating devices that are far more relevant to some of the stuff that is collected and within standardized EHRs. Physicians have to go to an external portal to be able to view the data if they can view it. It's non-standardized, from blood glucose meters to CGMs to like the blood pressure cuffs. Even though all of it's digital, none of it's incorporated into any of it. And is therefore of only limited utility in terms of meetings with my physicians unless I take the time to structure it, download it, et cetera. So I should not be the one developing the standards, but I think we do need standards for how this can be incorporated. And I wanted to include it in US CDI 4, but it didn't make any sense because I knew those standards really weren't there.
So. Right. Not yet, at least. Right. Good point. Good points. Like Eliana, you talked a lot about HIE dependencies and lack thereof of various systems or systems talking to an HIE. And you use the Austin HIE as an example in the last HITAC meeting, I believe, or before that. So maybe there's something there you want to articulate as well with gaps, specific gaps you've seen around leveraging those.
Yeah, go ahead, Mendel, while I'm thinking.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Mendel, then you're next.
Okay, well, you pass the baton to me. Sounds fantastic. So one of the things that I've noticed, even in my own clinical practice and also supporting providers and clinicians along the lines of PGHD, Aaron, you mentioned it when we were talking about public health, but I think it comes into this area as well. There is a pretty significant resistance to interfacing with all of these other products and services out there that are collecting the data. And there's a large amount of physician burden right now that is existing because of this lack of I would just say, urgency, as well as really feeling like especially our EHR should bring these other data sets in. And so the question is, in addition to, yes, the interoperability and making sure that some of these systems are certified, what are we going to do with some of our EHR vendors in order to make sure that they understand that we have to bring this data in at some point? And yes, there may be a safeguard of how we bring this data in and how we validate that data. But by having all the data in disparate locations, it is causing, number one, significant physician burden. But then number two, what it's causing is that it's not as streamlined in terms of the care that we're providing to patients as well. Because oftentimes the physician's like, I just don't have time to look at that data and go through that data. And that does not also interface with some of the other hospital or clinic generated data. And therefore, while this is very important data, if it's collected the appropriate way, it's essentially not going into the plan of care. So I think that there's just two pieces and two gaps and challenges here, not only thinking about all the data that's being collected in these various different vendor platforms and making sure that they is appropriate and validated data, and that hopefully we can have some type of interface with our certified health IT systems, but then also directly when it comes to our EHRs, how do we decrease that resistance for allowing this data to flow in?
That's a great point, Madel. That is a great point. And it does tie together. It does tie with what I said earlier, but at the same token, there's a lot more around that, to your point. It's a very complicated issue.
One of the things about this
we are past time. We started getting into it. I just realized it is time. We've got to go. Well, sorry, Anna, I apologize. Jim, I saw your hand held. if you guys will email in your comments. We were so deep in conversation, I lost track of time. So have a great afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much. Next time, we will pick it back up. Appreciate y'all.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
All right. Bye.